The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Britson. I'm your host. It is Tuesday, August the 11th, and gambling week is coming, but we don't want to wait, you know, till the week actually gets here to start talking gambling. Instead, we're going to dive in with RJ White in a minute about home field advantage in 2020, as well as some week one lines. As we mentioned before, we're going to do Nerd Week, Fantasy Week, and Gambling Week. Or as RJ White likes to call it, every day of the year. Just kidding. What's up, buddy?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Actually, I'm doing fantastic. You know why? One, because people keep leaving five-star reviews. And if they leave five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will answer them for the mailbag questions, including a question that was asked to us about, was it asked about Ninja Turtles, or did Ninja Turtles just sort of morph into a thing? Either way, you had a good idea. You think that I'm Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, I said, I think Wilson rebelled against the Ninja Turtle stuff. He sounded crotchety while he was doing it. And I said, it doesn't make sense because he's the perfect Raphael. So yeah. you get him as Raphael. You get Mikey as Breach, obviously. You'd have to be Leonardo kind of by default. You get
Donatello.
So-and-so is Donatello. You know, I'll take that spot because I used to consider myself a Donatello.
There you go.
But then when I was casting it, I said, actually, Debo's Leonardo and Brinson's Vanilla Ice. So that makes more sense to me.
Okay. I can get down with that. Stop. Collaborate and listen. And while you're collaborating and listening to this podcast, how about a round of applause? Pat yourself on the back. Pat ourselves on the back. Everybody cheer. We're a finalist for the People's Choice Podcast Awards. Thank you so much to everyone who listened. Debo, are we a finalist for the big award or just the sports award?
Yeah, sports category. So still a finalist, one of the 10 finalists. So thank you very much.
They're not a finalist for the big one.
No,
but that's okay.
It's okay.
We have a better chance of winning the sports thing than winning the big one, I think.
Absolutely. From the big one, you're pulling from 1.5 million podcasts. From the sports category, you're probably just, 100,000.
That's pretty good. We'll take it.
More like 1.4 million. You're going to say for sports.
Yeah. There's still millions. It feels like there are 1.4 million, because there are a lot of podcasts out there. But we're a finalist. And Debo tells me that I may have to make some sort of acceptance speech. Is that true?
Yeah. So even if you don't win, you have to pretend that you won, which you will have no problem doing.
No, that would be very easy.
So
it'll be over the top and unnecessarily. I will probably... And this is why it would be even better, because I will definitely fire shots at people who said it couldn't be done. And then ultimately when we don't win, it'll make the acceptance speech even more entertaining.
It'll just go in one of my folders. But here's the tough part. You have to limit it to 90 seconds, I believe. Are you capable of that?
If it's a 90-second speech, then we're playing it on the podcast regardless of whether we win or lose.
I like that.
I've also – and there's nothing we can – there was a suggestion by CBS HQ host and friend of the program, Amanda Guerra. So Jamie Eisenberg said if the Fantasy Football Today show wins the award, that he will shave his head. She was like texting me, and Wilson was like, you know what? You guys need to go up top. Brinson can have his chest waxed if Pick Six Podcast wins the award. But I don't know if there's any, it's like there's no like,
It's just, we're just banking on, although I guess I could influence voters who are current, who will be voting for this award, right? Is that possible? With the promise of waxing my chest?
That is not condoned. Just to be clear.
Which is a shame, because we know how much the world wants Will to wax his chest for some reason.
Bart Scott once offered to donate to charity, I believe it was 10 cents per hair, if he was allowed to wax my chest live on CBSSports.com, was a pre-HQ. And I said no. If he'd gotten a professional waxer, I would have done it for charity, because I'm a charitable person. But for me, just for him to do it, no. That's like potential long-term damage. So no dice for that. All right, let's get to some football, shall we? I keep asking this question. I'm sure it annoys listeners. But right now, as we're recording this on Monday, August 10th, and it feels like the future of college football is hanging in the balance. And it would surprise nobody if there wasn't college football this season, primarily because, and if people, I don't know if people understand this, it has nothing to do with like whether people want to play football or not, or even really politics or anything like that. That's what a lot of people assign it to. It's not that. What it is liability for unpaid student athletes. The NFL doesn't have that problem, RJ. So are you feeling confident right now that week one will be a go, at least in some semblance of what we expect?
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to get a week one. I don't know that we're going to get through this season. That remains to be seen. You know, baseball is going to be a good test case. We've seen now, I believe the Cardinals in baseball haven't played since the 29th of July. I think they're 2-3 right now, while some other teams have 17 or 18 games in the books. And that's just not something that's going to work in the NFL. You can't have like the Jaguars play three games while everyone else is playing 16 games. So they'll have to take some lessons from what baseball's doing, and they'll try to make it work, and hopefully they will make it work. You know, they came up with a plan that the players signed off on. And if, you know, both sides are willing to go to bat and try this, then all power to them. Let's do it. Let's do it under the best conditions we can. But, you know, you have to be ready for that possibility that things start unraveling. And what's your plan B at that point?
I don't know. Do you think they have a plan B?
They've got to. I mean, with how much money is in the balance and how much, you know, is on the line, they have to be having these conversations and saying, right, we've seen what's happening with, you know, one baseball team hasn't played for 2 weeks or 10 days or whatever it is. What will we do in that situation? What will we do when half the team is quarantined, you know, or test positive the day of? You know, you have to game these situations out and figure out what you're going to do. I don't have a good answer for that. There is no really good answer for that. And ideally, we'd all play these games without issue and there wouldn't be any worry about losing any games. But you have to have, you know, hypotheticals and plan Bs for everything at this point.
Yeah. And at least from that. So let me ask you this. You love betting futures. Usually around this time of the year, you're planning a trip to Vegas to bet a bunch of futures. And we've had multiple conversations in our Slack channels and on this podcast about what futures you're going to bet. Are you staying away from betting futures? Are you, because win totals to me feels like a real risky proposition, just because you don't know how it would be graded. Like taking an over seems like a foolish move to me.
Well, so yeah, I'm not, you know, full disclosure, I'm not betting futures this year. I'm not going to Vegas. I'm not doing any of that. Sure. So this is all hypothetical.
If you got a local book, would you be betting futures?
Right. It depends on how they stipulate. If you go to William Hill, it says all action depends on 16 game season. So right, if you're betting the over under on, I think Steelers are 9.5 and or whoever's 8, it depends on 16 games. If they cancel a game and they never make it up, you're just getting your money back. So do you really want to put money out there?
You
would just get back in 3 or 4 months or whatever it is. So,
put it in a savings account and get like 4%.
Yeah. So that's some people. You know, it's just the likelihood that we end up canceling at least one game or we go to a shorter season means I'm not betting certainly any 16 game futures. I think if you want to talk, will make the playoffs, won't make the playoffs, assuming we can get through the season, I'd be fine doing that, you know, win the division, that kind of thing. But you know, there are teams I like and totals I think are off in an ideal season where we play 16 games, but I wouldn't put money on it right now.
Yeah. And I think too, again, so like we had an issue with a college, my buddies and I had an issue with a college football total, an NC State total, where a game was canceled because of a hurricane in West Virginia. The team that was playing NC State was like, nah, we ain't making it up. And it was like, oh my God, this is going to be a problem. Like they're going to fall a game short of hitting the total because of that. And then ended up playing ECU in the final game of the season. I don't think they hit it anyway. I can't remember exactly what happened, but the point being is think about betting totals right now, win totals, it would behoove you to probably lean towards the under if you are, you know, if you're determined to bet them and there's not like, if there's not something that stipulates 16 games, which I imagine they all will, you should only bet the unders. I wouldn't bet an over of like 9.5 when we can go to 12 game season.
Yeah. The only way you look at, and you know me, I've talked about this in the past. You shouldn't be betting overs anyway. If you're high on a team, you should be usually betting them to make the playoffs or something like that. Try to find value there. Unless they're, you know, a projected like 3 or 4 win total team and you like them to go over just because there's so many extra wins built into the system because people are optimistic and like betting overs. So when it comes to futures, my overall strategy is to find the teams I like under the most and fire on those. But yeah. Definitely read the fine print here because I think in normal years, some books say as long as there's week one action, the season counts for the over under totals. So then if that applied to this year, then of course you would say take all the unders, you know, because if games get canceled, you're going to make out like a bandit there. But yeah, if William Hill said 16 games, I imagine all of them are putting that 16 game stipulation in place and you can't just make easy money off of taking the unders.
It would be pretty surprising if everybody didn't have that stipulation. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like what is the benefit to not having a stipulation outside of suckering some people who take overs? I just don't see the logic in it personally. So I would, that's what I would do. All right. Moving along to the story that you have written for CBSSports.com, which should be up by the time that people are listening to this. If not, you actually will be. You can check the link in the description as always, because Debo is great at what he does. And I believe it'll be up Tuesday, right? So, you do a weighted home field advantage formula that takes points scored and allowed over each of the last 5 years and gives a weight to who has the best home field advantage, because it's not just as cut and dry as like Seahawks are awesome at home. You know, it doesn't work like that anymore. How'd you do it this year? And do you think it matters?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is that this, like you said, it's a weighted formula. So 50% weight is given to the most recent year, in this case, 2019, then 25% the year before, and then it goes all the way back to 5 years, takes all that into account. And that's just a basis for deciding what home field advantage is. I don't just take whatever the number spits out and say that's the home field advantage, because some teams end up being negative because it just 1 year you have it. They are awesome on the road. This year, take the Ravens. They had like 3 blowout wins on the road. So their raw number came out negative. So you just take that into a factor. Usually the number, for a home field advantage for the worst team is usually around 2. The best teams are around 4. And then you kind of figure out where they fit in that scale. This year's a little weird, not just because of the pandemic, but because last year the data showed that there was essentially no home field advantage. Essentially, when you were on the wow. teams played just as well on the road as they did at home. So whereas in other years, like last year, the average team had 2.31 points of home field advantage in my raw formula. This year you cut it in half. There's only like 1.15 points of home field advantage.
Wow.
So that was just in a non-pandemic year where road teams went crazy to the extreme. So if you believe that the pandemic is really going to cause chaos and the home field advantage isn't going to be worth much, that's kind of already baked into the system if you're using the 2019 numbers where it actually didn't mean much at all. Right. Just got a random circumstance. So the way it affected me is instead of going in that 2 to 4 range, I handicapped teams to the 1 point to 2.5 point range. I didn't give any team a full 3 just because of, I think the fans not being in the stadium and the things that apply to that are going to make a big difference. But I do think you have to have some home field advantage because I think traveling during a pandemic is going to expose people to more risk than people being able to just stay at home in their normal routines. So,
and let's not forget that the NFL has, according to reports, they haven't actually said this, they have told teams that they would prefer that they arrive the day of the game to the travel. So it's possible that like it's actually bigger than, I mean, travel is not the same as it was 20 years ago. So it's different. Like, you know, if you're going from, New England to Boston to New York, like Boston to Philly, like that's not going to be a tough way to make that 1 o'clock kickoff. Right.
Right.
I mean, like that, but you know, if you got to go from like, Boston to LA. Even like Miami to New York is not super easy. I mean, that, you know, you got a chartered plane, you're spread out, but you know, you're a big dude and you've been compressed and you're getting out and you're not spending the night at a hotel and waking up. And I don't know. Like I always find traveling the day of something, I'm a little wonkier than I would be, you know, if I've been there for a day.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for these early games, especially the West Coast teams that have to travel, for them to make it work. I do think that, you know, obviously them traveling is different than us traveling. When we're going through commercial airports and planes, we're exposed to a lot more than
you don't fly private? Wow.
No, I don't fly private. I don't got that private jet money yet, but, so it's different for them, but you're still exposing yourself to more people that you wouldn't otherwise when you're at home. You know, whether you're getting into the chartered plane, you got to get food delivery somewhere if you're coming in overnight. You got to do all these different things that you're going to have exposure that you wouldn't necessarily have if you're just at home in your regular routine. I don't know that it makes a massive difference, but it's something we're going to have to monitor, because if we get 2 to 3 weeks into the season and it turns out the most affected teams are the road teams, then that's going to be something people are going to talk about. You know, where is this exposure coming from? So it is a small factor in there, but it's not enough for me to just say no home field advantage at all, you know, or a massive home field advantage, kind of split the middle at this point.
Well, and I think you got to be careful with it too, right? Like you don't want to, I mean, I don't know how much people are going to be gambling. I mean, you'll be doing your picks for Sportsline. You can go to sportsline.com/white to get the first month for a dollar. And by the way, if you get that first month for a dollar, you will also get a free month of CBS, or basically a month of, you get with Sportsline, you get CBS All Access. So whether you want to watch football games, you get all the CBS local games, all the games played on CBS, your local CBS channels. There's a ton of them. And you get Champions League, and you might even be able to watch, you can watch Chappelle's show now on CBS All Access anytime you want. I might go do that after this podcast. So go get it. Sign up through Sportsline. It'll be a dollar. And then, or maybe even do the free month of All Access, and then you sign up for Sportsline, so you get 2 months of all this stuff for a dollar. You get Champions League now, and then you get RJ White's picks when it matters in September. Long story short is that I think it'll be different. It's going to be this is going to be the hardest season in the history of football to make picks on a week-to-week basis, right?
Right. It's going to be the hardest. It's basically anything that you can think of. It's going to be the hardest to account for, whether it's coaches preparing when they can't have their quarterbacks in the same room, whether it's, you know, teams practicing when you got to quarantine people that have, you know, maybe even just been exposed to somebody that has coronavirus and doesn't actually have it themselves, but they need to get quarantined for 48 hours. So what do they do? Miss, you know, Wednesday and Thursday practice. It just seems like it could be a mess. I think you're going to have a big advantage for the teams that are very regimented and, you know, are known for having their stuff together, like the Patriots, and those teams that are a little bit sloppy with stuff and, you know, players get away with whatever they want. It's going to be tough to kind of wrangle them in when one or two bad cases could spread through your team. So it's just something that we're all going to have to kind of react to in real time. We can talk about what we think is going to happen in week one, but we don't have any precedent for any of this. We don't really know how to apply this to professional football. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. To the home field advantage point, just to belabor it a little bit longer, who do you think has good home field advantage?
Well, the numbers say the best last year, the best in the weighted formula due to their performance last year was the Colts of all teams. The last few years, it had been the Dolphins. People don't give them enough credit for being good at home. And you can play whatever, you know, put whatever you want into that fact, but they had been exceeding the numbers by like a large, you know, quotient. This time that didn't happen. I think they were better on the road this year. And, now the Colts took the crown. You know, they had a large gap in points against at home and on the road. So the defense played a lot better at home. Year before, it was their offense that played much better at home than on the road. Year before that, in 2017, it was the defense, which kind of yo-yos back and forth between them. So we'll see. I don't know if there's one, you know, takeaway you can pull from them, but they certainly have proven that they're a great home team. And they're one of the teams that I gave, you know, my highest point total to going into the year at 2.5 points.
Okay. Who will you be fading potentially?
We've been fading Washington year after year. We know that they don't have a good.
I'm fading Washington. That's not even a home field advantage thing, right?
Yeah, they never have a good home field advantage, and the numbers bore that out. They're one of 9 teams that had a negative number in the raw data, which means that they perform better on the road than at home. They were one. The LA teams, I think it's going to be hard for them. You know, they're moving into a new stadium. They've always had trouble at home because they don't draw a good crowd. So maybe this actually, if you can't have a big crowd, actually helps them because they don't get a lot of the opponent's fans in the stadiums like they usually do.
Poor Philip Rivers, man. I mean, I know he's going to your, you know, you mentioned the Colts is great, but it's like now he finally gets like now he would have gotten regular crowds for these games. Are you kidding me? Like this guy just can't catch a break.
Yeah. And the one team that had been good in the data was the Raiders. They had the third best weighted home field advantage mark, in the league with the raw data, but obviously that's not going to apply because they're not in the same place. So right. They're opening a new stadium in a new location. You can't really apply the Oakland numbers and that fan base to them. The good news is that if you've ever been to Vegas, you know, there actually are a lot of Raiders fans there. And if you watched how they embraced the Golden Knights when they got an NHL team, you really can have a lot of trust that community is going to rise up and support this team. So when fans are allowed into the stadium, I don't think that they're going to be a negative home field team like the Chargers and Rams have proven to be in their move to LA. I think that the Vegas, you know, crowd and the Vegas community is going to rally around them.
Do you think that it will matter? And we don't know what's going to happen with like Vegas itself, but do you think it'll matter that, that Vegas, like, so I mean, do you think they matter? Like teams are going to, if teams are playing in Las Vegas, do you think being in Las Vegas will impact these team, like will impact these players the way that it might have in a normal season? Because I think the expectation was fade the crap. Like if some, like if this team's going to Vegas, like these dudes are going to party on Saturday night or at least Friday. Like if they're, you know, depending on when they get there, they're going to party some. And so I guess the question is, do you think that will matter quite as much?
It might not, like I was saying earlier, it depends on the organization and the coaches in place and what kind of rules you have in place. If you let your players run wild, then they're going to get in trouble when they go to a place like Vegas. I think it's actually interesting in that Vegas is kind of an outlier because it's the one place known as the party capital. So even if you're kind of lax, if you fly into an Atlanta or an Indianapolis or wherever else, if you're going to Vegas, you better have like special rules in place to keep your guys in line saying, hey, I don't want to see, you know, video of you on the strip acting a fool.
Right.
So maybe the fact that Vegas is known as Vegas and known for what it is, would actually help teams that otherwise would let their guys kind of go off kilter, have more, you know, procedures in place. That's if I was running a team, I have zero experience with anything, but if I was having a team, I know we would be on our best behavior in Vegas just because you know how bad it can get.
Yeah. I mean, you'd almost be like, listen, we're flying to Reno and then we're staying in Reno for the night. Or like, you know, if you're coming from the East Coast, if you're coming from the West Coast, you're just coming in the morning of, you're like, listen, we're getting out of here on that red eye special out of Vegas on Sunday night. And if we're, you know, if you're coming from the East Coast, you're like, maybe take a bus or fly to like Topeka on Saturday, spend the night in Topeka and then fly to, I don't know. I would do something about it.
Yeah. You're overnight in Salt Lake.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like where no music of any kind is allowed. Road Warriors was a sub cat in this. What stands out to you on road games for these home field advantage teams?
Yeah, so I mentioned there were 9 teams that had a negative, you know, weighted home field advantage, and you know, some of them are the normal teams. I went over the LAs and the Washingtons. Then you have a team like Baltimore, which just like I said earlier, blew out 3 teams on the road. 59-10 against the Dolphins in week 1, 49-13 against the Bengals in week 10, and 45-6 against the Rams in week 12. So that they're not necessarily a bad home team. They just happened to explode on the road last year and it skewed their numbers. So I'm not going to get carried away with their adjustments just because their numbers are negative. I think I still put them at 2 points of home field advantage, which is on the high side for the 1 to 2.5 scale that I mentioned. But then another team that I think people assumes is a good home field is the Saints. They typically, you know, score more than 30 at home, and the offense, you know, it easily outproduces what they do at home as well when they're on the road. So you're usually getting, you know, 3 or 4 points better at home. That wasn't the case last year. They were actually better on the road last year, and they didn't score 30 points for the first time in several years. So then you add to it, the defense has always been consistently worse at home. They tend to play better on the road year in and year out, that they're probably given too much credit for being good home team. So I wouldn't overvalue them at home, and I wouldn't undersell them on the road. I'd probably be looking more likely to play the Saints on the road this year just because people assume they're bad on the road, and I'd be looking to fade them at home just because the number's probably going to be a little too high because they assume that they're so good at home.
I also think that the Saints, the offense has transitioned so much that it's not quite – I mean, they are still very good offensively, but it's not this, like, let's unleash Drew Brees and his, you know, post-pass prime on the entire league and light it up. Like, they like to run the ball plenty.
And they're very efficient. They throw all these high percentage passes, and he's completing 74% of his passes or whatever, you know, for multiple weeks at a time. And Michael Thomas is catching a 9-yard route that essentially is a long run on every single first down. And
right. I mean, they're not chunking it. They're not going vertical at all. Right. That's not what they do. And that's different than, you know, that means you're not going to blow teams out as much if you're, if everything's clicking, I tend to think.
Yeah, the old high-flying Saints were kind of looked at like the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes are now, and they're just not that team anymore. They're very efficient and chewing it up and not making mistakes. So that should help them to continue to be successful, because if your quarterback is, kind of his talent level is going down as 40-year-olds tend to do, then it just helps that you're not making mistakes.
All right, let's take a quick break. And we come back, we'll look at week one lines.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's the butterfly effect for
real. Okay, so NFL week one lines are up. I mean, they're still up, right? You still got NFL week one lines. What are you sort of thinking here as we start to, it is really hard to imagine. So we're recording this 30 days away from the first football game of the season. That's tough to imagine.
Yeah, just because we've all been quarantining in place and going through this routine, it doesn't seem like there's really anything that can break that us out of that kind of doldrum.
But it also doesn't feel like they're practicing football. Like at this point, so I mean, like it's August 11th as people are listening to this. Usually at this point in time, it feels like, you have an idea of the sense of like who's winning what positional battles. You're starting to see like teams getting trendy and in training camp and leading up to the preseason, all that. And I'm not wrong, right? It doesn't feel that way.
No, well, in a normal year, we would have just had the Hall of Fame game. So we would have already had football. We'd be getting ready for the first game for everyone else on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And that would be all we would be talking about right now. So the fact that we don't have that, and we know we still don't have that for weeks, it kind of just makes us all kind of stuck in place at this point and still kind of in off-season mode when we normally wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Will, Hard Knocks returning tonight.
Oh, that's right, Devo. I can't wait to see what scintillating footage that they've captured from training camp.
Do you think that will change? I get what you're saying entirely with what they're able to get, but do you think that'll change thing at all? Make you a little bit more excited?
Maybe.
1%?
Maybe I need to watch more NFL Network. I don't feel like there's a whole lot of NFL on the television these days. That's sort of the other thing too. Usually in August, I'm like, locked in on NFL football. I just don't feel it in the air. It's very weird.
And there's also other things to distract you. I mean, usually you don't have the NBA NBA season, NHL going off.
That's true.
As much golf as usual.
Soccer. There was a major this weekend. Like I didn't even think about football once this weekend. Yeah, Shout out Colin Morikawa.
I think all these other sports are kind of crowding out the air, and with no games going on, it's kind of hard to pay attention to football.
Okay. That's a good point. The Champions League is happening. So like all the buzz, again, on CBS All Access, which you can get for a first month for free. All the buzz isn't about training camp. It's about like sports are back for the first time. And so everybody's sort of amped up about it. That's a fair point. Maybe that's what it is. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited for football. I guess like I was with golf, I'm skeptical that they'll Charlie Brown me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't want to get too invested because, I can tell you right now, it's August 11th and I haven't done nearly as much prep as I usually do for the season.
I guess that's what I mean. Like I don't feel like I'm. It may even be, I don't even know if it's like skepticism. So people get mad at me on this podcast for being skeptical and pessimistic. I don't even know if it's that. Maybe it's that I mean, we've been doing this for 10 plus years now. And I mean, you have too, like in various capacity working in sports. And at, if you've been like, I've been covering the NFL for CBS for 10 years. And so I feel like my natural calendar rhythm and flow is very disrupted heading into the season.
Yeah, I would say the same too. And I just really did, because we had that opt-out deadline that passed last week, I really was waiting to in case that we saw guys opt out and it would screw with, you know, all my preparation. So I really waited until this past weekend to dive into the season and get these power ratings together and home field and all that good stuff that I normally do. And so this weekend was really my first big prep for the season weekend, where normally, you know, I'd be 2 months into it at this point at least.
All right. Let's talk about some specific bets though. So you met, we mentioned the opening game. I think right now, with the expectation that you will not see fans in football games, that if you have some stale lines out there for week one, you can get some pretty good numbers. For instance, I am looking at, on a local site, the Houston Texans plus 11. Now that's minus 135, which is extremely bizarre and juicy for a week one line that could, should be set in stone. Like, just make it plus 10. But Kansas City, defending champions, Andy Reid, hashtag off the bye, or hashtag Andy Reid off the bye, because, you know, he's got a full offseason to prepare for the Houston Texans, the defending Super Bowl champions, of course. But I tend to think that losing a first time in Arrowhead since the team won a title crowd is kind of impactful. And 10, 11 feels like a bit much for me.
Yeah, I would think 10 is too much too. My numbers have it at 7.5. So I'm full in. I think Houston's one of my best bets right now. The other thing we have to take into account is, because there's not preseason games, there's not, they're probably going to have some sloppy play early in the season. I think that shows up more on defense with tackling, with, you know, these guys getting into shape, that kind of thing. Houston is not a team you want to come to the stadium with a sloppy defense, because Deshaun Watson has shown he can score as many points as he needs to, you know, whatever situation. Yeah. I know everybody's last thought of Houston is them, you know, losing a 4-0 lead on Kansas City, letting it slip away and getting blown out. So people want to discount them, but it, not many teams are going to go up 24-0 on Kansas City in the first place. And when you have Deshaun Watson, he's going to be able to backdoor cover you in a lot of situations where, you know, other quarterbacks aren't. So I think laying 10 points is way too much, especially with that crowd factor you said. Houston should be able to cover this number in most situations, I would think.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think people will probably want to be on Kansas City here because it's more fun to be on the – they remember the playoff game. You know what I mean? So you're going to get some contrarian action there. I would bet this gets down closer to 7 than – rather than it rising up.
Yeah, we'll see if the sharp money moves it. I would imagine a lot of sharps don't want to be too invested yet with 30 days out, knowing that you could lose players left and right. But by the time we get to Sunday morning, once we know who's playing, I would expect sharp action on 10 for sure.
Do you? That's an interesting question, too, about these lines, too. Do you think heading into the 2020 season that – so we have over the past, I think, 2 years mainly, we've seen a lot of – in week movement of these lines, not necessarily because of injuries, but because there's more accessibility to big people putting big money or sharps getting money down on these games. You see lines move drastically early. And then, you know, for whatever reason, these lines bounce around, these NFL lines bounce around a lot throughout the week because there's a rush to have the lines out. Yeah, there's more accessibility. Gambling's more wide open than it was before. And I wonder now, do you think we'll see lines sort of maybe even set? I don't know about late. Like, I think it'll still be set on Sunday night, but maybe like more cautious lines, and then they sort of sit there and then move like crazy from Friday through Sunday.
Yeah, what I would imagine happens is that you still have your regular Sunday 7 p.m., 6 p.m., whatever it is, opening. You probably have lower limits, though, because I believe the books will want to see if there's any, like, positive tests to come out of playing a game where you're mixing with, you know, a whole team of people and a whole set of individuals that you usually don't. So if it comes out on Monday, Tuesday testing that, you know, 14 players from the Texans have tested positive, that line's going to be much different from the next week. So I think you're really going to want, they're going to wait to like open the floodgates until they get that information. Probably let you take games at lower limits until that point.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about some other games you got. You have the Pittsburgh Steelers -3.5 as one of your best bets.
Yeah, the Giants were one of those teams that, that had a terrible home field number in my formula. I think the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger back are, should be one of the favorites. I don't think they're getting looked at as highly as they should be. I think the Baltimore Kansas City is definitely the top tier in the AFC, but I think the Steelers are right there on that second tier with teams that other people like the Bills and the Colts and those type of teams, with Ben back. That defense is just so good. The Giants, we saw they lost, it looks like they're going to lose DeAndre Baker. They lost Sam Beal. That's two losses for a secondary that wasn't that great in the first place. So James Bradbury is going to probably see a lot of balls go the other direction on him, even though they spent a lot of money on him. Then you get Nate Solder opting out. And I don't know, a new coach is going to take a little time for them to get together. I have much more trust in Mike Tomlin, who's been doing this for a decade plus. So yeah, Pittsburgh seems to be like 3.5 is too low. I would have it at 6 just by the raw power rating numbers. And I might even just in the situation go a little higher than that. So I would be pounding the Steelers right now.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the problem with Pittsburgh for me is that we just don't know with Ben, you know, like we just don't know what he's going to look like. And I mean, I assume we'll get eyes on him before, you know, the next 30 days, right?
You would think. I mean, in what context, though? It's not like we're getting to watch preseason games, or it's not like we're getting to training camp. So we'll get a lot of reports like we usually do. But until we get like a setback, then I'm not really that worried about him. Once we start hearing some bad news, then I'll adjust. But until that happens, I think we can expect to see him in week one, and he should be pretty fine running that offense.
By the way, this happened right as we were starting the podcast, but I think it's just interesting for the purposes of what we're discussing. The Phoenix Suns and Oklahoma City Thunder. We're recording this at like 2:30 on Monday. Phoenix Suns and the Oklahoma City Thunder are playing a NBA basketball game. This Debo knows, big NBA guy here. At 2:30, at 2:35 or whatever it tips off. At like 2:25, the Suns announced their starting lineup. DeAndre Ayton, stud center, their second year center. I think he's a rookie. I don't remember. Anyway, he's not in the starting lineup. People were like, what? Like, what the hell is happening? He skipped his COVID test in the bubble. And so he's not eligible to play. That to me, RJ, sort of hits home with what we're going to face at maybe an even greater level in the NFL. Because like that happened, the Suns, he skipped it last night. Like, well, you couldn't have announced that sooner. I'm pretty sure he skipped it last night. Like, you can't. Wait, you have to wait until 5 minutes before the game to announce that. I know the NFL will be a little different because we have inactives, you know, at 11:30, you know, you have an hour and a half window in which you have to get inactives in. So that changes for the NFL. But from a value perspective, like, you know, there was value on maybe taking the Thunder, even though a bunch of their guys are out for different reasons related to seeding, you know, all of a sudden you find out Ayton's out. I don't know. There's a whole lot of, It's wild to me how close to tip off some of this stuff could happen.
Will, I just want to follow and follow up on that. He must have gotten his results back because he's been cleared en route to the game right now and can join
what?
The team.
What? He's in now?
He can join probably around halftime, but that definitely still affects things like you're saying. But yeah, that's the latest update from a couple minutes ago.
Like, what have you done? Okay, so Steven, thank you, Debo. Great job. So he was in, he's out, now he's back in. So he didn't skip the test. This is crazy.
No, he skipped the test, but I think you have to wait
for
the...
Was he riding like it's a small world? What's happening? Why is he not at this freaking stadium?
He was retested. I think he missed the initial test, retested Monday morning. You got to wait, obviously, for those results. Finally got it. So then he can go and meet up with the team. But they're in the middle of a game right now. It tipped off.
Yeah, it's already started. That's wild. So like, and that matters. That is a huge deal for DFS, obviously. It's a huge deal if you... Because so Steven Adams, and RJ, you're not bored by this NBA talk, right?
No, keep going.
Okay. Yes. But like, so Steven Adams, who's the Oklahoma City's best rim defender, was ruled out. And so was Nerlens Noel, who's a great shot blocker. So it was like, in theory, you could have been thinking about pounding the DeAndre Ayton over, you know, 11 and a half, like 20 and a half points or whatever it was, thinking he'd just have his way down low. And then he, you know, was only going to play half the game. So. Pretty wild. Maybe the Suns' second half bet would be something to take, which is completely lacking in help for the podcast listeners here.
No, so I think the lesson to take from the whole situation is that typically what you want to do is bet when the lines come out right away, fire on them early. Get the best of the number there.
Can't do that now.
Or the other situation is bet them right before kickoff when you're going to get a good number there and you have all the information. Here, I do think you can bet right away.
Okay.
Make sure you're taking the underdogs, especially the big underdogs, because when situations change, it has a much more, you know, different effect on the teams that are big underdogs, especially over a touchdown. Evening up those odds, then it will, like, okay, maybe they lose by 14 instead of 10, whatever. So I do think you could take advantage of that. If we didn't get any other information throughout the rest of the week, I would just fire best bets as all underdogs on Sunday. And that would be my default position. Mm. You'd have to convince me, to take a favor. But like I said, once we have all that information on Sunday, you can take whoever you want. The lines are going to adjust and you can have all that information and know how strong you think teams are going to be. If you're prepared with your power ratings and what you would do to adjust off quarterback absences, then you can immediately fire on it and know what the line should be.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing about taking the dogs is, like, in a perfect world, I guess taking the dogs makes this most likely. In a perfect world, you would love to find a window. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd love to find a window where, you won, like you get, I don't know, like somebody has a 5-point dog and then the other quarterback is ruled out and you get the other team as a 5-point dog and you just hope that somebody wins.
Yeah, that's why you move early on those big lines.
Yeah, that's
true. Those big dogs at the beginning of the week, because then you can play it back. We'll see how books respond to this, but if you want to parlay some money line underdogs, you know, you're multiplying your payout, and in uncertain times, you know, then it much that has to happen out of the realm of possibility for two teams that were 10-point underdogs all of a sudden are both 3-point underdogs, and you're getting what would you get at that point? Like a 16 to 1 payout on which should actually be a 5 or 6 to 1 payout. So
yeah, that's a good point.
You could really, you know, maximize the payout that you could be getting just on the uncertain situation.
Well, I think this may be why I'm seeing these lines on here. So for instance, the Dolphins are +7 -140. The Browns +9.5 -125. It seems like it's juiced pretty heavily to the Jaguars +7.5 -135. I don't know if that's the case industry wide, but I would, it's not surprising to me that an underdog would be juiced right now, because they want, if you're going to bet that dog this early, they want to make you pay a price for it.
Right.
So you're laying that juice, and that gives you less wiggle room to hedge and to window something, in theory.
That makes sense.
All right. What else you got for week one? Do you have the Dolphins? No. You do have another 7.5-point dog, though. My Arizona Cardinals, who are now, I see them +8 -130. I think my book's doing something weird here.
Yeah. The lines I have are all, I looked at were all William Hill. So 7.5.
All right. You're into partnership and synergy and helping out our partners.
Yeah, how dare I? So 7.5 seems like a lot. Arizona, we know, got much better. I don't want to come by completely into the hype in Arizona, but we've seen teams come in and have these Super Bowl hangovers. San Francisco, it seemed like their defense was so elite that we should expect just some regression, even if they are still really good. I don't think we can expect them to be, you know, top level elite as strong as they were. We've seen it happen to the Bears and the Jaguars and teams like that step back. That offense is going to be missing receivers. You know, you have Deebo Samuel going through his injury issues. You've had some other issues at receiver that they're really going to be leaning on Brandon Ayuk, I think, when the season starts, right out the gate. And he seemed like a guy that wasn't ready to come in and take a huge chunk right away. He's just a guy you want to work gradually into your offense and start giving him a bigger role. I don't know if they'll be able to do that. So they seem to be like a team, I don't know that I'm expecting them to go off offensively. And that just makes a big number hard to cover, especially when you have Arizona, who with their offense is getting better. It's getting more pieces in place. Kyler Murray's ready to take the next step. You could see them backdoor covering a 7.5-point spread as well. So this seems a little too high for me. I would have made it 5. But getting that hook on the 7.5 makes me love the Cardinals at this point.
Absolutely. I'm with you on there. And given the fact that, you know, San Francisco struggled with Kyler Murray and containing mobile quarterbacks last year, I think that's a no-brainer. You also have the Las Vegas Raiders. You are a Derek Carr supporter. Get off my podcast.
Hey, we love bagging on Carr, but you know, look into the numbers. He actually was really good last year. And so when Mariota was brought in, I don't think Carr is in any danger of losing his job. I wouldn't have been shocked if they would have drafted somebody, if Gruden would have fell in love with a quarterback like Tua and wanted to build around him. But you know, what Carr gives you is good enough at this point. And then they're going to Carolina and playing a team that's completely rebuilding, new coach, first time NFL, you know, coach, Completely rebuilt defense, all this young talent that's going to take a while to gel. Teddy Bridgewater getting his chance to start. Not many other pieces in place aside from Christian McCaffrey on offense. Question marks on the offensive line. I just don't think that they'll be able to keep up with Las Vegas. I have the Panthers as one of the worst teams in the league in my power ratings. Probably not as bad as Washington, but right down there near the bottom. While I have the Raiders right around average. And so to me, going into Carolina, I would make this about, Raiders minus five, Raiders minus four. Right now, I think it's -1.5. So I think you're getting good value. Anything up to three, you're getting really good value. So that's why I'm taking the Raiders as a best bet.
Okay. Is there a path where Carolina is competitive?
I think it's going to have to happen in the second half when it's too late for it to really matter. Because I just think that defense being as young as it is with the new coach. It's
impossible to imagine that defense being good.
I just don't see them, you know, starting 6-2, 5-3 out the gate and people getting excited about them. Might be a thing where they're 1-7 and then they go, you know, 5-3 over the second half and get people excited. But nobody's going to really notice it because when you're 1-7 and you end up 6-10, nobody really cares how that happened. So maybe that if that happens, start looking at them as a sleeper for the next year. But I wouldn't really put too much stock into them this year.
So we mentioned the travel stuff and the home field advantage stuff. I mean, the Raiders are, I know it's week one, but they're coming east and they're starting at 1 o'clock. Would you bet the Raiders now or would you wait to see what the travel protocol is going to be? Because, I mean, clearly if they have to like get up at 3 a.m. Eastern or Pacific time and like haul ass to Carolina and then play, that's not ideal.
Yeah, I would wait. We'll see how absences affect them as well. I don't think there's really many people that are going to move the line for Carolina if they're out, except for Teddy. And Vegas, you could see, you know,
maybe Christian McCaffrey.
Well, yeah, Christian McCaffrey a little bit too, but he's a running back, so he shouldn't be moving the line anyway.
Well, I know, but I'm saying like I think he would move it because of public perception, but I don't know that like Vegas would necessarily be that concerned about Christian McCaffrey's absence.
Right. So I don't think you're going to get any more of a discount for you know that side of it because they're just the line's not going to move off them. You could lose some value on Vegas and then want to take them at +3 instead of -1.5, you know, or however that situation plays out. So yeah, I would probably wait. Like I said, betting it up to 3, I think is still great value. So if you can get it under 3 and you see it start to move, maybe you get it at 2 or 2.5. Because I would put it at, you know, 5.5, somewhere around there.
I was a little surprised you didn't have Seattle included heading to Atlanta. I know that you've pounded, and we've talked about this a bunch on this podcast in the past, you pounded the point that the Seahawks are fantastic in the Eastern time zone.
Yeah, and I would have them as slight favorites in this game. They're slight underdogs, but it's not enough. If I would make them -1 and they're +1, that's not that huge of a swing going around the zero at that point. Right. So I do like Seattle, but I wouldn't. I think Atlanta's probably underrated. We expected they would fire their coach, and they didn't. They did a lot of good things on that defense in the second half of the year once they got their coaching staff set in place, and they looked better in that. You can count on that offense. It's been very successful. So I think with the hype of Brady coming to Tampa, Saints, we know we're going to be good. Atlanta's kind of getting slept on. They seem to me like a 7 or 8 win team. And I kind of think people consider are just holding their breath, waiting for the coach to get fired, probably thinking of them more as like a 5-6 win team. So I wouldn't be willing to fade them at this point.
All right. I am actually seeing week 2 lines on here. And I know we discussed this, but would you have a strategy if you had week 2 lines available to you? Or is that just too far out like the Bengals are +9 against the Browns?
Yeah, I would definitely want to wait to see how week 1 transpires and see how many players are getting sick, what we're going to do with protocol. It just seems like a little too far. We want to get that data in because that data is so key. But if you are going to play week 2, like I was saying earlier, look to the huge underdogs because they're not going to go to Bengals Browns isn't going to go to +20, you know, but it really could come down to pick.
Could be a pick. I mean, like if Baker Mayfield gets Corona, it could be a pick 'em.
Yeah, it could be a pick'em, but it's not going to ever go that far in the other direction. So,
right. So if you got +9 and a pick'em, like you're feeling pretty good about a 9-point, you know, window for an NFL game, or even like +3 and or +9 and -3, like neither one of those would be necessarily, you know, bad to have.
Yeah. So I just think you're not going to get much movement if you're taking a huge dog the other way against you, but you could get a lot of value going, you know, back towards zero. So if you're going to play early lines,
what happened for the Bengals to be 21-point dogs to the Browns?
Who are they playing the first week? They're playing Chargers, so they probably have to lose like Dolphin style, 59-10 that week.
And then Joe Burrow gets sick.
And then, Joe Burrow gets sick, and you're playing, what is it, Ryan Finley still the number 2 there? Did they get someone else?
They got somebody else, but Finley will probably be the number two.
Yeah, so
it's like Ryan Finley versus a loaded, like a Browns team that wins big and the Bengals got smashed with Joe Burrow.
Well, the Browns are at Baltimore. So if they're even competitive in that game, you'd figure.
Well, they beat them in Baltimore last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they're scoring 40 on them this time.
Probably not, but you never know. Kevin Stefanski is an upgrade. I mean, Freddie Kitchen scored 40 on him. Somebody had Freddie, you know, Kevin Stefanski. Okay. Any more thoughts from week one, from things that you noticed?
Yeah, my raw numbers, there was two games I didn't put as best bets, but they would suggest the lines are too far off. I would take, we talked about Washington not having a good home field. I would make that line against the Eagles 10. Yeah, okay. It's six right now. I just think there's not a home field advantage there. The Eagles are so much better. They're very consistent. Everything's in place while Washington is starting over, rebuilding. They have a good defense, but, who knows what that offense is going to look like. You got players getting cut. You have no receivers really because Harmon got hurt. So it's Terry McLaurin and good luck for the rest of the offense. So it seems like a game where the Eagles, I think, can run away with it.
Darius Geis, as you mentioned, who was had multiple counts of domestic violence issues, was immediately cut by the Redskins, which tells you how probably serious it is. Also, Ron Rivera wanted to send a message. I think anecdotally, Doug Peterson has been pretty good a bit against Ron Rivera. In 2017, they stomped him on that Thursday night game. That's just sort of me thinking out loud. So I mean, that could factor in. And then, you know, last year the Eagles were losing early to, who was the Case Keenum. And then, Carson Wentz and Deshaun Jackson lit it up and they came back and won and covered the 10. I
don't think they covered.
Maybe they didn't cover, but they
came back. It was 7 or 8 and they won by like 5 or something.
Oh, you know what? They were up 13 and covering and the Redskins, Case Keenum went down and threw a backdoor touchdown. Mm-hmm. To cover at the last second. So the point being is that the Eagles are, you know, even if they start slow, can certainly come back and cover a 6-point spread against the Redskins.
Yeah. But then everything else that I've said up to this point, not wanting to lay these big numbers, makes me not want to put the Eagles as a best bet. I just think the number should be a lot higher. So if you're looking for value on a number, I like them. And then I also like, Chicago, Detroit. I think Chicago should be 3-point favorites here. Detroit is a 1-point favorite. We're going to have to see if Stafford is healthy. I think he will be. But Detroit looks like a little bit of a mess defensively. I don't have a lot of faith in Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky, but I do like the fact that we're getting consistency from that offense, the same guys in place. The defense should still be good. I think they can come out here and win this first game by a field goal. I think they're clearly a better team than Detroit, and they should be favored here.
Okay. All right. RJ White at RJWhite1 on Twitter. Go to sportsline.com. Use promo code WHITE to get your first month for $1. All RJ's picks plus – tons of DFS content in there. Mike McClure is cranking out winners. He's hit like 4 or 5 golf winners in a row or something like that. So make sure and check that out at sportsline.com. Plus you get CBS All Access for free. It's really too good of a deal. I don't know why we're offering it. RJ, we'll talk to you very soon, pal.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.